strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it. Collaborate and listen. I sit back with my brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly. Flow like a harpoon daily and nightly.
Will it ever stop?
Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights and I'll glow. To the extreme, I rock a mic like a vandal. Light up a stage and wax a chump like a candle.
Not only do I know the words, I used to know the dance.
When I play a dope melody, anything less than the
I used to know the dance.
Don't lie, Mike. You still know that dance.
I don't remember it. I used to know the dance.
Yo, I'll
He was a big Miami Hurricane fan. We know that. He also follows me on Twitter, which was a big deal for me when he followed me on Twitter. All right, sorry. Sorry, Vanilla Ice memories. We have got to talk about this. Listen, it's a very important topic, and it is about housing. And we've talked with Ken Peterson before. He is the VP of Sales and Marketing at Shea Homes. And the topic of housing, affordable housing, building enough housing, and now we've got other things involved. He joins us again. Ken, thanks for being on the show again.
Absolutely, Mike. Pleasure to be here.
So I want to ask you a couple of questions about how things may have changed since the last time we've talked. Where are we on inventory for homes in general, but about new construction homes as well? How are we doing on inventory? Are we staying ahead of need? Are we catching up with the need, or are we still in a bad place?
No, I think we're getting into a better place. You know, the whole shift during the pandemic when, you know, everything thought the market was going to slow down, the real estate and housing market. And then we had this big spike. And I think a lot of us were taken off guard. And so we had issues with supply chain, issues with labor. And that's really worked itself out. And really starting in the beginning of last year, builders took a more aggressive approach with the rise of interest rates to put more inventory homes in the ground, even though the sales demand wasn't there. And so what we've seen is this shift from people going out, buying a new home, picking a home site and having us build it. They're coming into communities across the valley for homes that are near completed, I would say within about 45 to 60 days. So people can come in, purchase a home, lock in an interest rate, and take advantage of builder incentives to buy there right now.
Are we going to see a change? There's been a slowdown in the market. Interest rates played a big role in that. Are we going to see that change? Are we going to see people like we normally do this time of year out there selling their homes and buying new homes, new construction or otherwise?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because all of the stats really talk about the resale market, you know, the increase 23% year over year with homes on the market. I think we're right around 20,000 resale homes. You know, our homes don't go on the market. So new home communities, builders would only list a home or put it on the market if it was complete. That supply is really down because we're selling those homes in advance. So I would tell you that we're having a really good year. Not spectacular, not overwhelming, but we're keeping up with the demand and getting people into homes.
So there's been a lot of talk of how we build affordable housing. There was a bill in the legislature. I just want to get your opinion as a new home builder on this. A bill in the legislature that would change zoning codes across the state of Arizona. And it's been my argument that if you give home builders an opportunity to build less expensive homes on smaller lots, that there's a market that's underserved out there, and many home builders would kind of jump at an opportunity to do that. Do you believe there would be builders out there that would jump at that market if given the opportunity?
Absolutely. I mean, if you take a look at the Phoenix MSA, you know, we're a large city. There's a lot of places that, you know, we'd love to build in. But there's a lot of restrictions as well. And those could be impact fees in the community, the overall density. And so you're seeing a shift in the market. But, you know, when we talk to consumers, they will drive to buy for affordability.
And so, yeah, that's the thing is it seems like there's a little bit of that NIMBYism that everybody understands we need to build more affordable housing, but people don't necessarily want it in their communities. And that's kind of an area where it's a little frustrating to watch that happen, because I think quality builders like yourself could still build a quality product, maybe smaller on a smaller lot where it would satisfy the needs, but still give people a quality product to buy.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you take a look at the I-10 corridor, you know, we build and other builders build off that. You know, we have single family detached homes and a beautiful master plan community. The one I'm referencing is Alomar, which is about 8 miles south of the 10. We have homes out there for $400,000. So, you know, there are homes out there that can be from that 375 to 425 range. The challenge with a lot of people is when you're looking at a 7% interest rate,
right?
It makes it a little more difficult. But, you know, I would say last month, our average home closing was about between 4.9 and 5.2%. And that's with our incentives to buy down that interest rate to get people into homes.
So what are the big challenges? What should people that are looking to at new construction homes or in homes in general, what are the challenges for the buyers and what are the challenges for the builders you see happening? Are they reoccurring? Or are they new challenges coming down the road?
I think it's all about perception, and I think that's our biggest challenge because you have, you know, volatility in the market. We don't know what the Feds are going to do. We just got a new jobs report. We have, you know, forecasts that say, hey, interest rates could drop 6 times in 2023. Now it was 3 times. Now, well, we don't know if interest rates are going to drop. If they drop, maybe that's towards the end of the third or the beginning of the fourth quarter of this year. And so that's making people hesitate before getting out there and making a decision to purchase. If you look at home prices, they're continually, you know, eking up a little bit because it's really the supply and demand that's happening in the market. So, you know, I think it's just consumers saying, you know what, maybe it is a good time. I've been waiting, and as long as I wait, you know, interest rates are staying about the same, but home prices are continually going up. And so we have, you know, really high traffic in our communities. Our teams are out educating, you know, customers if they want to live in an area and they're comfortable with the pricing, then, hey, it's a great time to purchase. I don't think you're going to see, you know, a big decline in home prices. I mean, all costs are going up for all consumers across all goods and services.
So when you advise people, when you in the industry, I'm not talking about customers, when you're talking within the industry, you feel confident that the home market's going to remain strong in Arizona because we're a destination for growth, and you think that things are looking good for the industry as a whole.
That is my outlook. I mean, if you take a look at Arizona unemployment, we're at 3.2%. Nationally, we're at 3.9%. Many of our buyers, and we built from 400,000 to over 5 million. You have people vacating other parts of the country where, you know, if you live in Arizona, you look at home prices and how they've moved. Affordability is a huge topic, but we're cheaper than some other markets where people are coming to Arizona from. And then we do have the luxury home market, which is driving, but the whole landscape of Phoenix has changed over the last 10 years. I mean, we are a destination.
Ken, I always enjoy talking to you. I like the updates. I think people out there are very concerned, and you're right. I think it's a lot about perception, and making sure that perception is closer to reality is always the goal here on the show, and I appreciate the help today, and I hope you'll come back soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right. That is Ken Peterson, VP of Sales and Marketing for Shea Homes. Just a little update on the real estate market and what you can expect, whether you're buying, you know, in the resale market or a new construction. I just think it's good information because a lot of people are concerned about things. And maybe sometimes maybe it's justified. Other times, maybe not so much. Coming up in a moment, the Office of Accountability and Transparency, known as OAT in the city of Phoenix, says Phoenix PD investigations are sometimes not thorough or complete. We're going to talk about that coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we are going to talk about recruiting for the military. As you know, we are big supporters here of the military, of the men and women that do serve and have served. This week's podcast that we've just released is with General Muhlenbeck, and she oversees. She's the Adjutant General over the National Guard and the Air Guard here in Arizona. interesting life. If you want to watch an interesting podcast, she's so thoughtful and she's so well respected by the people that work for her. And we were talking about recruiting and what great opportunities there are in the Guard. And we've heard stories of the military not meeting recruiting goals. So we decided we're going to talk to some people. So we've got recruiters we're going to talk with about the Guard, specifically why they are in the Guard, what the great opportunities are, and just learn a little bit more about it and some of the challenges to recruiting. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. The Office of Accountability and Transparency, Phoenix PD, did not do thorough and complete investigations in some incidents, what this story says. What I find interesting about this is they look at a couple of different things, and there's differing opinions. One of them is, hey, listen, you know, the idea of the Office of Accountability and Transparency is a really good idea. That you've got a separate set of eyes that are not PD, that are not the county attorney's office, taking a look at cases to see, just kind of get a different set of eyes. They've got really no investigative authority. They don't certainly don't have any arrest powers or enforcement, but they do have an opinion. But here's the problem in my eyes. The Office of Accountability and Transparency was implemented as a response to the Defund the Police movement. You're not going to convince me otherwise of that. But what they did at its inception, and there were changes made legislatively at the state level because of this, the office is constructed with people that are not in law enforcement, and they did it intentionally. As a matter of fact, they didn't want anybody working in the office that has ever been in law enforcement or a family member, an immediate family member of anyone in law enforcement. So they said, we'll consult law enforcement when we think it's necessary. And then they're going to be critical of law enforcement. And I just think that's an absurd. I find that to be an absurd thing. And here's why. Nurses and retired nurses have the ability to understand the complications and the complexity of being a nurse. Same with doctors and dentists and lawyers. And that doesn't mean only doctors and dentists and lawyers and nurses should oversee their individual professions, but they certainly should be a big part of the conversation. I'm not a cop. I know a lot more about law enforcement than the average civilian. My brother and his wife are cops. I know saying I've done ride-alongs, it doesn't make me an expert, but what I have done is I've invested my time into watching and observing law enforcement and seeing what they do. The split second decisions that they have to make. And when they don't make them, I'll give you an example. Phoenix PD, this is a Phoenix PD thing. Phoenix cops were at a convenience store and they had talked with a guy in the parking lot. I don't know the particulars about why they were talking with him, but there was no arrest made. There was nothing done. I'm sure they didn't even frisk him. They didn't do anything. Had a conversation with the guy. We're going to leave to go to another call, got into their patrol vehicle, and the guy that they didn't search, that they didn't frisk, that they didn't do any contact with, pulled out a gun and just decided to start shooting at a police vehicle. There was an incident that happened in Phoenix years ago where a police officer in Phoenix lost his life. Car full of people, they pulled over, and instead of pulling everybody out of the car, proning them out on the ground or putting them on the car and searching them, this officer didn't do that. And for whatever reason, and someone in the car shot that officer and took his life that day. That's not every incident. That's a small percentage. But if a police officer isn't on his or her highest alert when making contact with the public, bad things can happen in an instant. There was a situation with a Phoenix police officer years ago, and it wasn't that many years ago, but years ago, where, and it was in the neighborhood of Cave Creek Road in Cactus, pulled a vehicle over and what you and I would say routine traffic stop. There is no such thing. And as the Phoenix police officer approached the vehicle, for whatever reason, the driver decided to shoot through the driver's window and shot the officer in the collarbone. Officer did survive. But this was one of those, it was just a traffic stop. So why is a cop got to be on high alert? Why does a cop got to tell somebody to get their hands out of their pocket? Why are they so mean? Why are they on edge? There's a lot of things that we don't witness. We assume that when we make contact with law enforcement deals with us and we deal with them in the same way. It's not true. When I get pulled over, and I've been pulled over before, all of my windows go down in my vehicle. All of them go down. I have my hands where they can see them. If it's nighttime, I turn the dome light on so they can see in my vehicle. I have a firearm in the vehicle. I always tell the cop where it is and that I'm not going to reach for anything until they tell me to. And I want them to realize I understand they don't know who the heck I am, and I want them to feel safe. My point is, I also know from experience in watching it happen, not reading it, not videos standing there and watching it. That's not how everybody responds to law enforcement when they get pulled over. People are rude sometimes, they're belligerent, they act irrationally, and an officer has to know, or a trooper or a deputy has to understand, you don't know what you're dealing with until you're dealing with it. So I have no problem with oversight, and I don't think most people do. What I have a problem with is ignorant oversight. People that don't know what they're doing, what they're facing, what they're seeing, and making judgments in Monday morning quarterbacking with having no idea what could have been going on. That, for me, is the biggest issue in this. All right, what we're going to do in a moment is we are going to speak with the Arizona National Guard recruiters about recruiting in the military. Are there challenges? Are they meeting their recruiting goals? And if you are someone that's concerned or are interested or know someone that's interested, we'll give you some tips on being able to meet with them and possibly look into this as a career move for you. We'll get to that coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right. This week's podcast is with the general from the Arizona National Guard, General Muhlenbeck, and she oversees the Arizona National Guard and the Air Guard. And we got to talking about recruiting, and it's something that I've been involved with. My brother, who I've talked about often, was killed in Iraq back in 2003, but his goal was to go back home in our hometown in Florida and be a recruiter. He loved the military that much. We started talking about the Guard and the uniqueness of the Guard and the great things they do. So joining us right now is Sergeant First Class Steve Champagne, who is actually from Arizona. Is that true?
It is true. I was born in Detroit, but I've grown up in Arizona. I graduated from Ironwood High School, and I did an active duty tour and then came home, and I chose to, after a small break in service, I chose to serve my country in the Arizona Army National Guard.
We see a lot of stories about the military not meeting its and having challenges at meeting their recruiting goals. Is that happening in the Guard here in Arizona, and are you seeing an improvement?
So, recruiting is a challenge, right? Because recruiting is about having conversations. So if you're not having conversations, you're probably not making mission. Now, the National Guard as a whole made mission last year, not by a lot. It was a little sliver, but the National Guard as a whole made mission. Arizona, I don't know where we ended up at. I know my company, Alpha Company, ended up very well. We had certainly specific recruiters make mission. I know this year I've already made my mission for the year, but I keep going because it's an ongoing thing. Manning the force is always an ongoing mission.
I was so surprised when I went, and I've been to a lot of ceremonies when units come home and meeting people that have served for very long times, been on multiple deployments, and talking about the Guard specifically, they love serving because they're not just serving their country, but they're actually serving right here in Arizona.
Yes. Well, the idea being, right, if there's ever an emergency here at home, we're ready to take care of it. When I graduated high school, I went active, right? I thought, hey, this is the thing to do. I have to go serve my country. I got to, go do my 4 years. And then I came home. I didn't even really know about the National Guard, and I'm not knocking somebody who wants to graduate and go do that. It's certainly a very necessary function of national security. But you could serve here at home. We have very active, our infantry sends people to Ranger School. We are very active here at home as well.
Is it frustrating? Because as much as we've done on this show and I've done personally with the military and with veteran organizations, I didn't know a whole lot about the Guard. Mm-hmm. Is it frustrating you as a recruiter that people don't understand the advantages to being a real citizen soldier and serving in your community? Can you explain a little bit of what that is?
Yeah, so that's the challenge, right? It's just getting the message out, right? I say that as somebody who like I just said, I didn't know about the National Guard until, I did my time active duty, came home, and then was just working in the civilian sector. And I was like, man, I miss shooting guns and sleeping outside. How can I do that? And linked up with the National Guard recruiter down the street from my house. I was 29 years old at the time, came back in, and it's been great. But yeah, I mean, you can be home. You can have a family. You can have a civilian career. You can go to school. You can do all these things. And this is, this is probably the most non-invasive way to serve in the military and not have it run your whole life, right? And then to that point, you know, we have people that that just do their 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year, get their college paid for, great. And then we have people that do so much more, right? Do individual mobilizations. They help out on deployment rotations all over the world, you know. So we have a little bit of everything.
And it's also a big family. I've every year, or most years, I have been the master of ceremonies for the MPs here in Arizona for their dinner and for their celebration. And it seems like it's just a big family. It's like a family reunion when they get together. And I kind of love that feeling that everybody lives here in Arizona. They've got that commonality, but they're still serving their country in the capacity of the military.
Right. And that is just the idea behind it. I know I have a soft spot for the MPs because when I came back in, I did my 2 years there and then hopped over to being a paralegal, which was my real goal. Right. But yeah, it is a family. Right. And so even as a recruiter, I know I personally put in, you know, people and then their younger brothers and then their, you know, spouse teams. I mean, there is an ongoing undercurrent of being a family and being a member of the Guard.
So give me the pitch. What is the advantages to a young person that's listening or a parent that has a young son or daughter that may be interested in a career here? Mm-hmm. What are the advantages to the Guard? When you say to them, what is it that you're going to get in the Guard that's unique and that you think is a benefit?
Yeah, so there are many benefits. So one of the things I like to do is I like to, in a person in that situation, I listen to them and think about what are they trying to achieve, right? Do they want to be a fireman? Okay, well, you know, do you know that we have preferential hiring for municipal positions? Okay, so do you want to go to college? Well, we have federal tuition assistance and state tuition reimbursement. You can graduate from college debt-free. We have ROTC scholarships. We have ways that you can... you know, if you do end up taking out student loans, we have student loan repayment, right? But all those, right? So you have the discipline. You wear the uniform. You have the pride of wearing a uniform, of accomplishing something big. Gosh, I don't know. I remember I enlisted a guy a few years ago. Him and his wife owned a business. They were making $500,000 a year. He was paying $1,800 a month for health insurance. He enlisted just to come on TRICARE, and because TRICARE will cover a family for $250 a month. And folks don't realize this, but insurance runs the world. Okay, so if you want to get ahead of that, you know, come on. We have programs for that.
And it also, being in some of the places here in Arizona, Guard bases here in Arizona, there is some high tech stuff that people can get into. You're not just limited on the scope of the job that you can take.
Yeah, so we have the 25 series MOS, the communications, the IT specialist, the 94 series, very technical positions. But even to that point, you know, it's like you could come in and be in the infantry for a few years and then study those high tech things in the civilian world. We'll pay for that, right? We want that. Matter of fact, that's worth promotion points. So if you really want to get ahead in your, you know, infantry position or cook position or whatever, go do some of that extra stuff, you know, make yourself a more well-rounded citizen soldier.
So if people out there are interested, they want to learn more about the Guard here in Arizona, how they can serve or just learn more about it. Is there a website? Where do they go to find out more?
So the National Guard social media, the AZNG team on Instagram is one way. I mean, my own number is 602-361-4220. People can call me. I'm always happy to talk. My phone's on all the time. And if anything, I'll talk their ear off.
You're a brave man giving your cell phone number out on the radio.
Call me, guys. Call me. I mean, worst case scenario, I got to block someone.
Okay.
Big deal.
All right.
But you know, and then our website, they can, you know, just Google Arizona National Guard and by zip code, it will, you know, they can go in and kind of say, hey, I'm interested. I want a recruiter to contact me. And, you know, all of our guys are really good about getting back to folks and you know, at least going over benefits and qualifications with them, right? Making sure, hey, are you even qualified to do this, right? I mean, because there's a baseline qualification that we need you to meet so that you can come in and serve.
It's an honor to meet you. We truly do respect the service of all of you in the military, and to have it be, I fell in love with this place when I moved here in 1995, and actually before, on vacation, and to see people that serve their state as honorably as they serve their country and proud of both, I think that's the coolest part of it. You know, seeing the pictures from people being deployed, holding the Arizona flag, and so proud of that Arizona flag, or the Cardinals flag. flags. I know there are some people out there that are flying that during the football seasons. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
No, it's really cool, and I'm glad to be a part of it. I know Captain Hannigan's also glad to be a part of it. You know, we're all just glad
and it's
to be
great
here.
That you're in Arizona, home recruiting people from Arizona. That's great stuff.
Love it. It's a recruiting point, right? You can live here, serve here. You can do these things you want to do, and you know, again, serve your country and not have it run your whole life.
It's great to meet you. I appreciate you coming in. All right, that is the recruiters from the Arizona National Guard. Look into it. It's a great career. Coming up in a moment, we are going to talk about Arizona. How large is the elementary school district? What they're doing to fight the chronic absenteeism? We'll get to that in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, it's Brother Ed on the Wheels of Steel this morning. Hitting it out of the park, my friend. That is some Friday music for sure. Thanks for being here, everyone. Happy Friday from the Mike Broomhead Show. Education, a topic I love to talk about. And a big thank you to the Arizona National Guard. It was great of them to come in and actually come in studio. We could have done it on the phone, but they were kind enough to come down here. It's always good to talk to them as recruiters. If you're someone that wants to serve your country, look into the Guard. It's a great opportunity. Good people that love serving their country and love serving their community. So check it out. Chronic absenteeism. Now, this is even at the elementary school level. I've joked around about it and I've talked about skipping school as a young person myself. I did in high school. I think that's kind of a tradition when you get older. But we're talking about chronic absenteeism even at the elementary school level. The Washington School District addressing this. But I want you to hear a little bit of a report. This is from Channel 12 concerning this trend of the chronic absenteeism.
One of the new catchphrases in public education, chronic absenteeism. The state reports an astounding 28% of Arizona students were chronically absent last year. That's more than twice as high as it was before the pandemic, and low-income students struggle even more.
So we understand why that would be. I think most of us do. But here's how they're battling. This is Joe Dana over at Channel 12 talking about how one teacher is combating this.
In Quinn Fullerton's third grade class,
we are constantly talking about attendance.
Everyone knows you gotta show up.
We track it on the board. How many days in the month do we have perfect attendance? You know, I give out prizes.
And Fullerton goes a step further. If a student's missing after the morning bell rings, Fullerton makes an immediate phone call to the parents.
And I just say, hey, just checking in if your kid's coming. It's important to be here.
Constant communication with families and emphasizing attendance, attendance, attendance through messaging are two ways the state's largest elementary school district is trying to battle what is a national problem.
And so it is a national problem. And here is the issue. And I've been as serious about this as anything else, especially at the youngest ages. When I was a very young student, I think this is a big passion of mine because I am a victim of this, of my own doing, but I'm also a recipient and a beneficiary of the other part of it. At a very young age, I loved school. Because it was ingrained in me to love school. I was a good learner. I was rewarded because I was a good learner. In other words, it was celebrated when you were a good learner. I could read at a very young age. I was rewarded and I was I'm trying to think of the right word to use. That I wasn't just rewarded, but I was recognized as being a good reader. My self-esteem went up because I could read very well at a young age. I never realized how well that would serve me later in life because when I went into high school, my parents got divorced, the classic thing. I'm the oldest brother of three. Nobody was going to tell me what to do. Rebellious, mad at the world. My parents got divorced and I went off the rails as a student. I didn't care about high school. I didn't want to know from nothing in high school. I didn't want to hear from anybody about high school. And I ended up on a track that could have been disastrous. When I found the career I wanted at 18 years old, when I found a trade that I loved, I had a skill set. I was still a very good reader. So whether it was something called a spec book to bid a job or whether it was reading blueprints, whatever it was, I was able to not just read but comprehend what I was reading. It was a gift. It was something for me that I never realized I needed as badly as I needed it and that it would benefit me for the rest of my life because I didn't care when I was that young teenage years. So when we're talking about an elementary school district that is fighting chronic absenteeism, what's happening here is even if these kids get back on track at 14, 15, 16 years old, even if at 18, 19 years old, whatever it is that clicks for them and they want to do something with their life that takes them in a different direction, are they equipped with the tools to do it? Do they have the education tool belt they need? Can they read? If you can read, you can learn anything. Basic math skills, that is the building block so that you can do the more complex math. You know, are you able to do basic math so you can learn the algebraic equations that go with being an electrician? Can you do the geometric? Do you know geometry well enough to be able to learn how to bend conduit and do the other things in our trades? Those are the things that matter to me more than anything. So to watch these school districts fight chronic absenteeism, it terrifies me in the elementary school age, because you're going to get kids who catch on later, but they're not going to have the tools. They're going to be back in remedial reading, back in remedial math before they can go on to the things that are important. I was fortunate enough that I had the basic skills, so I was able to continue to learn. At 18 years old, I picked it up and was able to sprint into my career with the basic skills. If you have or you know any of these young children at the elementary school age, they may not comprehend yet how important those basic skills are, but you have to make it a celebration for them. They've got to be rewarded when they can read. I think that was the best gift I was ever given at a very young age. So I don't think it can be overstated. I don't think I'm overstating this or overemphasizing it. I think it's a huge part of the growth and the success for people down the line. What we're going to do just after 10 o'clock is we do our ballot breakdown every day. There is research out there about the presidential candidates that we keep going to, and I think it's important for us to get to, because what they are saying about both candidates is surprising.